Thank you for joining another episode of Tech in Maine Presents, where we bring you the best insights from today's leaders and experts in technology. Today, we will be speaking with Vlad A. Ionescu of Earthly. Vlad, welcome to the Tech in Maine Presents podcast.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, Vlad, the pleasure is mine, sir. Thanks for taking some time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day for you there at Earthly. But Vlad, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm a technologist by background. I focus on developer infrastructure in my career. And as part of that, I founded two companies in the past, a cybersecurity company called ShiftLeft, and more recently, Earthly. At ShiftLeft, we analyze code for vulnerabilities and tell you whether you have any before you ship to production. And we do it much faster and much more accurately than anyone ever could before. And at Earthly, we are building a build framework that makes software builds dramatically faster, more maintainable, and easier to use. I have a background in software engineering. I'm an ex-Google, ex-VMware engineer, and I was also on the early team of RabbitMQ. I spent some time there before getting sold to VMware.
Okay. Well, Vlad, that is an awesome background, man. So let me ask you this question. You mentioned being an ex-Googler, right? I know, at least, you know, it's reported that that alumni network is pretty tight. You know, like, you guys typically stay, you know, in contact with each other. Is that pretty accurate?
You know what? I think it has been changing a bit. Maybe 10 years ago, it was tighter. Now, like, Google has, I don't know, like 100K people or something of that sort. It's been, and so of course, the alumni network has grown as a result too. I can't say I've kept in touch with, you know, the official alumni network. I am part of it, but I've not really, not going to any events yet, just yet. But I've definitely kept in touch with some of the colleagues I've met at Google there. Yeah, they're some of the best people I've met in my career. So it's been such a pleasure to just keep in touch with some of my mentors and just, you know, catch up now and then.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Vlad, of course, we're here to talk about what you're doing currently at Earthly. And so tell us, what has you most excited about your daily work?
Yeah, well, to be frank, it's something very simple, but I really enjoy making developers happy. And, you know, it's this idea that we're building something fundamental to the field, something that many people will use to create innovation in their own fields, right? They're building on top of our technology to deliver some amazing applications in various fields. And they're doing that innovation, and we help as part of that in a little way, in a little bit meaningful way. And that brings me the most joy, bringing tools for people like me, people that are also developers, and making them be that much more productive and effective in whatever they do. And I really enjoy, you know, delighting our users as well, in ways that, you know, giving them an experience that maybe they've never even imagined was possible. And I think that's our sort of, you know, that's the best feeling in the world when you can deliver that. And we're getting some glimpse of that a little bit at Earthly, but it's really enjoyable to see every time when someone is impressed. And that's the most exciting thing for me, to be honest, like helping people out and making the world a better place. The world of software engineering specifically.
Okay. Well, Vlad, that's a great answer. Let me follow that up with this question, because you're talking about developers, right? And that's the community that you serve. You know, what would you say are some of the major issues facing your clients, that developer community that you just mentioned?
Yeah. If I were to summarize it in one word, as what the industry is facing today is maybe complexity. So there are many factors that go into this problem of complexity, but it's something that we're seeing over and over again in every company or user that we meet. And the reasoning is part of the problem is that with the introduction of containers, more and more teams use a different set of programming languages within the same company, right? You have the freedom to put anything in that container. It abstracts things away for you, and that gives you more freedom, but also it gives you more complexity. It's hard to collaborate cross teams because of that sometimes. And then we're seeing a mix of architectures more recently. You know, the introduction of the new M1 MacBooks has really shifted the way people do, you know, development on their laptops, which is different from the production, which is still mainly x86. That has introduced more complexity. And that with, you know, just the evolution of software engineering in general, where our standards are shifting, the way we do things are shifting. We're going from a more traditional poly repository approach where we have code in multiple places in the organization to maybe a mono repo approach where we put the whole code in the same repo and then sharing libraries and artifacts within that same repository. These are things that create more difficulty in the way developers approach their own day-to-day work, the way they integrate with different teams, the way the developer infrastructure is put together, and just makes things really difficult. And sometimes as a result of that, it makes things also very sort of slow in the way you know, their pipelines execute or the way they have to work with each other. And it's just very difficult to maintain CI/CD pipelines these days because of these reasons. And no CI/CD provider out there currently supports monorepos, like, which is a big trend. And so we're seeing many teams start off with a simple setup. They don't maybe think too much about it. And then when they get to 50, 60, 70 engineers, they hit this wall. It's hard to make progress. It's hard to maintain the same agility. It's hard for them to be, you know, just productive in general when you reach a certain threshold of complexity. And I feel like that is a key problem to solve right now in the industry.
Okay. Well, Vlad, I appreciate you sharing that. So, I mean, obviously, Earthly, you know, is not your first rodeo, right? You talked about shift left and, you know, obviously some of your corporate background. As you are working with the developer community, right? You know, and you talk about that complexity. How specifically does Earthly help solve that complexity?
Yeah. So on one hand, we use containers throughout. So Earthly is a CI/CD framework, which allows you to develop CI/CD pipelines for every CI provider. So we're not necessarily replacing your existing CI/CD provider. We are an ingredient on top, which gives you extra productivity as an engineer, extra maintainability, and also faster CI/CD pipelines. And to explain the way we do that, I usually talk about how traditional CI/CD works. And that is, you commit code to GitHub, and then you wait for the CI/CD platform to kick in. Then there's a bunch of downloads that are happening. You install programming languages, you install dependencies, you maybe compile some dependencies from other projects and so on. And up to this point, we're talking about things that are repeated exactly the same on every single CI/CD run. And then after this, you maybe run the application or run some tests on it. But the very first part that I mentioned takes most of the time of the CI/CD pipeline run, and is always executed the same way, but nobody really short circuits that portion of the CI/CD pipeline. And so with Earthly, we allow you to cache things much more aggressively than anyone ever could before, in that as soon as you want to try out a change that you made to the code, the platform immediately gives you feedback without having to download or reinstall things over and over again. It just reuses computation for things that have not changed. And that results in a dramatic improvement in the speed in which you can execute these things, the speed at which you move as an organization as well, because you can iterate faster on your code, on your you know, what the app that you're developing. And basically it gives you a significant edge to what you thought maybe productivity was supposed to be. So like nobody is doing anything quite like this, right? So people have been getting used to the old way of CI/CD. People think that's it, that's the best we can do. And we've sort of accustomed ourselves with the way things are. But the part of the things that we do is educating the market that actually, you know what, things can be better and things can be dramatically faster than maybe you've ever imagined was possible. And we're not sacrificing security, we're not sacrificing anything. There are no hidden strings here, no strings attached. You just get a significantly better developer experience right off the bat. And that goes back to the complexity problem. When you lose control over your developer infrastructure, that's when your productivity goes down because CI/CD is very difficult to manage. And a big part of what we do is simplifying your setup, making things easier for any developer to contribute to your CI/CD, making it much more democratized within the team, and giving you that agility to work fast with your CI/CD platform.
So Vlad, here's how I'm internalizing this, right? So I'm a VC, right? And I have a significant amount of money invested in one of your customers, right?
Right.
And I want them to get that app into the marketplace, right? I want them out of beta. I want them live as fast as humanly possible. And here's why, Vlad, because the sooner they go live, right, and the sooner they can start generating revenue, the sooner, we go, from that series A to the series B, et cetera, et cetera. So I am very, very interested, right? I am salivating, Vlad, when I hear you say what you say. Is that pretty accurate? Would
It
you?
is
Okay.
absolutely, yeah. And time to market is critical, especially in these times when budgets are being constrained. We were seeing layoffs in the industry, and maybe you had, I don't know, 50 engineers before, now you have 30, right? You have to figure out a way to make those engineers more productive and being able to deliver faster.
Yes, sir.
And we did some math actually. We looked at how CI/CD time improvements result in extra virtual headcount, like almost as if you have had more engineers on the team just because of the productivity unlocked. So if you do the math and look at the average, average time spent on CI waiting for CI/CD per engineer, and then you say, if you bring a technology that gives you 2.5x faster CI/CD, what does that mean? And our math shows that basically, in a team of 30, you gain two extra engineers. And those engineers are expensive, right? Like in the US, maybe I looked up the median salary, it's something like 120 or so, very conservatively, K per year per engineer. So getting those extra two engineers is like money you didn't know you even had, productivity you didn't know you even had, just giving you the ability to execute more with less resources.
Oh, Vlad, and that is music to my ears, right? That's music to the ears of me, a VC. It's music to the ears of the board, right? That's music to the ears of the head of engineering, right? You're basically telling me, hey, Sean, I can get you the equivalent of two full-time employees.
Exactly. At a fraction of the cost.
Bro, I'm just saying, that's you had me at hello, right? Like that's amazing news. And for you to have gone out and quantified it like that, shows that you really, I mean, so we're talking about, how you're serving the developer community, but it's even down to something as simple as, hey, I'm helping you go tell the story internally. right? By showing you, verifying for you that my tool can help you get the equivalent of two full-time employees. Like
Exactly, exactly.
that's how you build a competitive advantage without even
Yes.
saying it necessarily, right?
Yes, exactly. And yeah, speaking of which, we've sort of gotten used to CI/CD technology to be very undifferentiated. Like in the last 10 years, there hasn't been a significant shift in the industry. And a problem we're seeing ourselves right now is that when people hear CI/CD, they think, oh man, I've seen them all. I've tried them all. They're all the same, just different syntax, the same, but otherwise the same thing. Being able to differentiate in a market that has been so constant, I think is critical to build something meaningful in this space.
Oh, Vlad, I love that perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that. And at this point, let's switch gears a little bit and talk to some of the young people, right? And that could be young in age or young at heart, right? Those that are looking at a career in technology, what advice do you have for them, Vlad? Talk to the people.
A piece of advice that I've given typically to more junior people is, and I've not heard this many times actually. I'm kind of surprised I've not heard it, but I always encourage people to work for both big and small companies, because I feel like the skill set you develop in each of those environments is drastically different. Like the needs of the company are very different, and the agility, the level of responsibility is very different. And so you would maybe learn very different things, both of them very valuable from each of those types of companies. For example, if you go to a big company, you learn best practices. You learn how to do things right. You learn how to maybe even a little bit of politics. Big companies are not easy to sort of contribute to when there are many teams and many people on those teams, and then standing out is very difficult. But it sort of develops a certain set of skill sets, which are typically very if you're in software development, for example, they're very tech focused. And that's very important to get right. And then on the other hand, if you go work in a small company, you're going to wear so many hats. You're going to be the engineer, but actually you're also the support person. You're going to be the sales engineer. You're going to be occasionally even the company's administrator. I don't know, just ordering donuts or whatever. You're going to do a lot of things that are not necessarily related to just the technology part of it. And you will also have much more responsibility. In a small company, every single person is critical. Like you're not a small cog in a big machine. You are absolutely critical for the well-being of the company, the future of the company. And you will be given tasks that are maybe more than you're qualified to deal with, but you're going to learn, you're going to fail, and you're going to learn from that and grow and just develop a sense of problem solving that you've never maybe even thought was possible. And I think having both of those experiences and maybe also being able to learn the trade-offs. It's easy. It's very typical for an ex-Google engineer. I've done this myself, by the way, so I'm guilty as charged. But a very typical thing you would do is say, "Oh, back at Google, we did these things this way, right?" And that's nice, right? It's like Google has a lot of infrastructure and a lot of people to deal with that. But the needs of a small company are very different. And over time, you will learn how to make the right trade-offs to figure out whether the Google solution is a best solution for this particular situation, or if you have to think more frugally, have to think more in a way that a small company might think about that problem. Try to simplify it, try to reduce innovation as much as possible, take things off the shelf, just not try to reinvent the wheel, and be just very effective in the task at hand. And I've not heard many people sort of give that kind of advice. But I think once you have those two on your resume, your appeal to any company out there will skyrocket. I think anyway, engineers, even in these times when there are a lot of layoffs, they're still in high demand. And I feel like you're basically going to be a rock star if you are able to be effective in both of these environments.
Now, Vlad, I think that is wonderful advice, and you are absolutely right. That is uncommon advice. And as I was telling you before we started, you know, we're 4 years into this, right, doing the podcast, and so that is the first time that I can remember hearing that advice. So thank you for that unique perspective. I appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear it.
All right. Well, Vlad, let's do this. Let's get personal a little bit here. So these next few questions are going to be specific to you. And the first one is, name your favorite musician or band.
Yeah, I'm kind of old school. I like Depeche Mode. I like them because they mix a bit of electronic and alternative. And I kind of like the combination. Like I also like electronic music, like, you know, Rygsop and Air and 07 and Portishead. So I kind of like the mixing these two worlds into a single sort of experience. And that's what Depeche Mode is to me.
Okay. Oh, Depeche Mode. That's a great, great answer. I love that. All right. How about a favorite hobby or pastime?
I love skiing a lot.
Okay.
Except I have a newborn son, and it's a bit harder to do that these days. But I'm gonna put him on skis when he's like 2.5 or something.
Okay. That is a great hobby. So let me ask you. Where would you like to ski that you have not gone skiing yet?
Oh, that's amazing. I've heard great things about Colorado. I've not been there to ski, and I want to go there someday. And I've not done one of those helicopter sort of drops. Sounds kind of like fun. Sounds kind of like dangerous. I don't know. It feels interesting.
Okay. All right. Yeah. A little Mission Impossible going on there. Okay. I love it.
Exactly.
All right. So, Vlad, what is a favorite place to go on vacation?
I usually like nature. So it got kind of plays into the theme of mountains and skiing. But yeah, I usually like relaxing getaways, maybe hikes. The opposite of that will be sort of city visiting. For some reason, I just don't enjoy that quite as much. I like just relaxing and you know, getting away from the busy lives.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. I mean, you know, you've got a lot on your plate, right? And so, yeah, I think to be able to just unplug and, you know, go for a hike, you know, a nice nature trail. Yeah, that I can totally see that. And of course, with the newborn, you know, you just strap
exactly.
The little guy in and, you know, you're good to go, right?
Yeah. Even that part is harder. Like he has now 8 kilos. I forget what that is in pounds, but yeah, he's getting heavier and heavier and harder to carry, especially for a longer stretch of time. But yeah, we for now we're just doing the stroller friendly hikes, and that seems a bit easier.
Okay. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. So, Vlad, what teacher at any level has had the greatest impact on you?
So I think I mean, for sure my physics teacher, and it's kind of like a interesting story actually. So this is my physics teacher that was tutoring me in high school.
Okay.
And I was a mediocre sort of physics person in 10th grade or so, but this guy was like, no, we're going to prepare you for the Olympiad. And he just ran with me, and I give him all the credit. He was an amazing teacher. He gave me the love for physics, but also he gave me a passion for problem solving and, you know, just understanding how to approach very difficult problems. And with his guidance, I was able to get in Romania's Olympic team for physics. And for context, Romania is one of the best teams out there. Like we always win like 4 golds and 1 silver or something like that every single year, with just 5 people being able to qualify. So I was in the reserves. I didn't qualify for the internationals, but it was an honor working with, just being around really, really smart people. And the thing is about this teacher is that he made me realize that, one, I'm not dumb, which is kind of silly, but that was my realization. But funnily enough, one day he mixed up the schedules and I got in the same session with a certain girl, and that girl ended up being my wife, and now we have a son together. So like, can you top that as a teacher? Like, I don't like changing your life so much. I don't think anyone ever could. So I just love him for that. And yeah, he's been amazing.
Oh, Vlad, bro, that is an awesome, awesome story.
Like the level of impact this guy has had on my life is beyond imagined. So like,
seriously though, this is what I love about that question, right? And obviously we're an audio podcast, and so people can't see how your face is lighting up, right? But and of course, that's mostly due to, your amazing wife and the relationship that you have, and you guys have a kid together. So, you're smiling and you're very happy. But just think about, like you said, that impact that, your high school physics teacher had, right? And creating that safe environment for you to, make mistakes and to, feel a little bit less than, but to not leave you there, right? And right. to build you up. And like you said, and I think the critical piece is he ran with you.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah, he took me under his wing, and that has been just amazing. Like he believed in me more than I did. And that was something that really stuck with me.
And Vlad, that is all we as human beings really need, right? And you can be the CEO of a fast-growing startup. You can be, that high school Vlad, who's still trying to figure things out, right? We all need someone to come alongside us. And whether that's, a high school teacher in Romania, my wife's a third grade teacher, here in Atlanta.
Right? Oh, nice.
That's one of the things that I love about teachers, the impact that they have.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
It's beyond amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm surprised we're not investing more in teachers, like globally, as a sort of, when we look at how the education system is sort of overlooked and how this is shaping the future of our country, of the future of the world in general, it is so shocking that people are so short-term oriented, and we cannot just invest more in this direction. I was reading this book about capitalism in the 21st century. It's a classic, and I think one of the things that they point out is that the main driver for economic success within a company, based on like enormous historical data, the main factor isn't healthcare, isn't startups or whatever you can think of. It's education. That's the number one driving force for any sort of development in underdeveloped countries, in the way different such countries have sort of evolved and have become even superpowers these days. The main driving force has always been education. And if you want to create a long-lasting sort of community or country or anything like that, I think the first thing you can look at is education.
So Vlad, that is so true. And here's a disclaimer, right? I am not, I don't get royalties, for from Malcolm Gladwell, but I'm going to mention his book Outlier, right? Because it speaks to exactly what you were talking about. Malcolm Gladwell in that book, towards the end of the book, one of the things he looks at is the notion that the Asian population is just so much smarter and better at math than everyone else, right? And what he does is he kind of goes behind the curtain, so to speak, and he looks at what really goes on, right? And really, Vlad, it comes down to, children from Asian cultures are typically in school longer than their counterparts around the world, right? So their school day is longer, and then the amount of time that the length of time of their school year is also longer, right?
Interesting.
So Vlad, just so it's just on sheer numbers, right? And let's say the school day is 10 hours, right? And let's say they're in school 240 days out of the year, right?
Right.
And let's say that out of those 10 hours, half of that time is spent on math.
Right. Yeah, that adds up.
Vlad, over time, right? That is just, it's again, it's not that you're necessarily smarter, it's that you've been exposed to the material for a longer period of time, right?
Yeah.
So that when you are 18 years old and you are the equivalent of a high school graduate, you've just had more exposure to those critical subjects.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
And
And
then
so,
if you scale it out to a big population, those gifted people will sort of rise up. Like if you just give them the opportunity. So just keep giving them the opportunity, those special ones will rise up.
exactly. So that's the thing. And I'm not here to solve, the world's, geopolitical and education problems. But that small example, I think, ties into, what we're talking about, which then goes back to the importance of teachers, right? Because if you are spending that amount of time pouring into and sowing into children, it would make sense that, these teachers should be able to pay their rent monthly.
Oh yeah,
I'm just saying.
exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they're so valuable and they create, so many amazing running successes, right, with their work. And yet, we as a society don't, even the basic compensation, we don't do that right. And I think that that should change.
Yes, agree, agree. All right, so Vlad, let me ask you this last question here. We are gonna jump in the time machine and we are gonna go back to the 18-year-old version of you. Vlad, what is the you of today going to tell your 18-year-old self?
Yeah, I would probably say believe in yourself and stay humble. That's it. I maybe spend too much time doubting myself, and that's a double-edged sword. And I think that's maybe the one advice I would give myself.
Yeah, I think that is so good, right? Humble, humility, right? The flip side of which is humiliation, right? That same root, right? It's like you said, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? You don't want to, go too far, to the extreme. You want to stay humble, because it's when you do that that amazing things happen for you, right?
Exactly. And fun fact, that's why we named our company Earthly, from the expression down to earth and being friendly and accessible. We just wanted that to be our internal culture, but also maybe a testament to the products that we build. We want them to be friendly and accessible. And we want to spread that idea around the world.
Well, Vlad, hopefully this podcast episode contributes in some way, to that ethos. Vlad, it is an understatement to say that it has been a pleasure to meet you. This has been so rich, and I am honored that you would spend time with us.
Oh yeah, no, the honor is mine. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, Vlad, before we let you go, what is the best way for people to connect with you, connect with what you're doing in Earthly?
I am Vlad A. Ionescu on Twitter, and if you want to check out Earthly, go to earthly.dev.
Okay, great. And of course, we will have that in the show notes. But Vlad, man, again, I can't thank you enough. And I just really have enjoyed our time together.
Awesome. Well, it was great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Techamain Presents family, thank you as always for listening. And be sure to tune in next time when we will have another technology expert share their wisdom. Goodbye for now.